Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Back to Tommy Tucker, WWL, AMFM.com.
Thank you, David Blake. I think all of us have been to malls that ain't what they used to be. We used to have a couple of them here, and they're disappearing. I know renting the commercial space for once pretty vibrant, thriving brick-and-mortar stores, that's becoming a problem for people that own that property. And we're talking basically about shopping at brick-and-mortar stores as opposed to online, as I understand it. Recently, online overtook brick-and-mortar. Barbara Kahn is nice enough to join us, professor of marketing at the prestigious Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania, and author of The Shopping Revolution, How Successful Retailers Win Customers in an Era of Endless Disruption. Good morning, Professor. It is an honor to have you on.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell me about, if you can, the background of all of this, the history of brick-and-mortar stores, online shopping. At what point did it really become fashionable to go online and not go into a store?
Well, I wouldn't say that brick-and-mortar retail is dead. I would say bad retail is dead. Good, exciting retail is still alive and well. But there's no question that e-commerce and shopping online has changed American shopping behavior. People now, when they find something easier to buy online, they're going to buy it online rather than schlep to the store. But there's still reasons to go to the store. There's still pockets of really big excitement in retail.
What would that look like? What are some of the pockets of excitement?
stores like Sephora or Ulta, they're doing really well. Target is doing well. Walmart's doing well. Costco's doing well. So some of these stores that offer consumers advantages are still doing well. Walmart, Target, and Costco, of course, they compete on low price, and they each have a slightly different model, but there's a lot of people still shopping in those stores. Sephora and Ulta are very much experiential. When you want to buy cosmetics or beauty, you actually want to go into the store and try it on. So that's more fun than buying online.
And same thing with clothing, right? Because people are different. Sometimes it fits them. If you're a perfect 38 or a perfect whatever it is you wear and it always fits, then you're okay with that. But I would think few of us are, right?
Yeah, I mean, so the reason to go into physical retail is, one, it could be fun, it's experiential, you might need it right away, you can't even wait a day or an hour for a delivery, or you might want to talk to someone. All of these kinds of things are reasons to go into a physical store.
Tell me about your book, How Successful Retailers Win Customers in an Era of Endless Disruption. What is the endless disruption?
Well, I mean, a lot of the disruption is coming through Amazon. Amazon has seriously changed the way we shop with one-click shopping, you know, one-hour delivery, things like that. Anything that's at all annoying to go shop for, it is so much easier to buy online. And that has radically changed stores. So there's no doubt there is a retail apocalypse. But, you know, mall traffic is way down, as you noted. A lot of chains have gone out of business, Toys R Us, Circuit City, Borders. These stores that used to be around are no longer here, and a lot of that is attributed to the disruption that Amazon has caused.
Will you allow me a sidebar, Professor, because I never did understand how a business model of letting people hang around and read your books without buying them actually could work. Am I missing something here, or did somebody actually think, yeah, that's a great idea? Because to me, that's called a library, not a book retailer, right?
You mean like Borders?
Yes.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never could get that.
I guess they made money on coffee or something.
Well, apparently
like that.
Not.
Not enough, exactly.
I remember going in there with my kid, and it's like, well, what is this about? She says, well, you can sit around and read. I said, well, you don't have to buy the book? No. Because back in the day, the joke used to be, you know, you'd be at the drugstore reading a comic book, and the guy would say, this ain't no library. Buy it or leave. And I just never did understand how that could work. Are there others, speaking of that, other retail retailers that maybe have tried some things that they thought would be a different business model and failed miserably?
Well, I think the retailers that are particularly susceptible to the Amazon threat are what we used to call category killers. And those were big stores that have a really big assortment and would sell things at a cheaper price. But now it's much easier to buy those kinds of things online. So anything, and that's what you're seeing with, you know, Toys R Us were kind of like, it was a category killer for toys. Borders was a category killer for books. Tower Records was for records way back in the day. And all of those things are much easier to buy online. So those are particularly vulnerable to the online threat.
See, but to me, part of the fun, and my kid's 22 now and just graduated from college, but part of the fun with Toys R Us was to take them in, see the excitement, the anticipation as they walked around deciding what they want or et cetera. And somehow that doesn't count for anything anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, good stores can still do that. I mean, I think you see that kind of excitement, by the way, in a Target. A really well-merchandised Target will still have that kind of excitement that you're describing. One of the things that's different in toys also is a lot of the toys have moved to more electronic kinds of things, games and things like that, and that is more digital just in nature.
Let me take a break. When we come back, I got a lot of questions for you. Okay. And I'm sure the audience does as well. 260-1870, or it's a lot easier for you to text your question in, 870-870. It would be nice if you'd include your name, and I will pass that along to the professor and get your answer. We're talking about brick-and-mortar stores as opposed to buying things online. And a lot of people are not happy because they have to work at brick-and-mortar stores Memorial Day weekend, both Sunday and Monday. But then again, if the alternative is sitting at home every day, maybe you should be glad you're working. 916, back in a flash, WWL. A story from Fox Business piqued my interest about 2 days ago, and it was called Retail Apocalypse, These Big Retailers Closing Stores, Filing for Bankruptcy. And Barbara Kahn is nice enough to spend some time with us, a professor of marketing at the prestigious Wharton School of Business, University of Pennsylvania, author of The Shopping Revolution, How Successful Retailers Win Customers in an Era of Endless Disruption. So I guess, Professor, in a way, if you look at, I guess the most recent one we heard about was Dress Barn, right?
Yeah.
Is this normal market expansion and contraction? Is this something that the companies did wrong? For example, H.H. Gregg, maybe in a way they took on debt, managed their internal affairs. Is it a combination of all of that and online marketing?
Yes, it is all of that. I mean, first of all, the U.S. has had too much physical retail space for a long time. We have way more stores per person here than anywhere else in the world. So even if all of these other factors didn't factor in, you would definitely start seeing the closing of some physical stores. There just was too many stores, and you can feel it yourself when you go to these chains that overextended themselves. And second, you're right, if they take on debt, then they have to deal with that debt, and that makes it much harder to do business. So there are some of those issues that have put that have accelerated the closing of some of these stores. But in general, I think that the traditional or legacy retailers didn't see this radical change in behavior. So the idea of shopping online or shopping through your phone, you know, if you have any young people in your life, you know those people know how to shop that way. They do everything through their phone. And if you didn't understand that that's how the world was changing, you were going to be in trouble.
Well, and in terms of business, correct me if I'm wrong, I would never pretend to tell you at the Wharton School of Business, but I was always under the understanding if you're going to be successful in business, you'd better be able to pretty accurately predict the trends 5 and 10 years down the line?
Yeah, absolutely. And that is one of the things that Jeff Bezos understood right from the beginning in 1997 when he started. He understood the power of the internet way better than other retailers, and he invested in that and really, you know, was one, obviously a huge factor in what changed shopping behavior. But he saw that coming. There were a lot of other retailers who were in a good position to take advantage of that, but they didn't recognize it. Take Sears. Sears had the catalog. That's a direct business where you're directly delivering product to the to the household. So that was something that could have developed into a profitable online business if they had seen it at the time. But as we know, Sears is really struggling today because they just haven't kept up with the trends and changing consumer behavior.
Yeah, it fascinates me what you're talking about because in a way, and I was watching this old movie, Judge Roy Bean, I think it was, and at one point he gets out the Sears catalog, which is set in the late 1800s, to find something. And I thought, well, you know what? That's kind of what Amazon is doing, except instead of clicking online, you're kind of, and those of us that are old enough remember those big, thick Sears catalogs. They were kind of fun to read. It was like surfing the internet, Professor. You turn in the pages and looking at this and that and the other thing. Then, like you say, you'd order it and they'd deliver it. Could Sears in any way, because Sears has, it puzzles me how they are still open. I don't know how they're doing it.
Yeah.
Does it puzzle you as well?
Yeah, I mean, Sears is just really, if you go in the stores, they're just completely empty. The retail there is terrible. They sold off a lot of their most profitable brands and things that were really good, and they're just limping along till the end. And it's very sad because a lot of people have some wonderful memories all locked up in Sears, let alone all the jobs, et cetera, like you were talking about earlier. You know, so it is kind of sad when you see the end of an era.
So why couldn't they? Is there any way they could, in essence, I guess maybe make the catalog, and this is going to sound silly, but put the catalog online or try to adopt some kind of model like that, but only move it forward, modernize it, or has the Sears ship sailed? And you got to be careful how you say that, Professor.
Exactly. No, I don't think they can get that back. I think they missed that. One of the things that's difficult about competing with Amazon is Amazon has other revenue sources and traditional retailers don't. So Amazon makes at least 60% of its operating profits through AWS or Amazon Web Services. They make more. They make money also from their marketplace, which is where they collect a fee and other people do the business and store the inventory and do the selling. And then they make revenues off Amazon Prime. So there may, and let alone the new advertising business and content business they're getting into. So they're making money off of other things besides just the retail transaction. And that gives them an incredible advantage over more traditional retailers.
I hate to waste the time with a professor at the Wharton School of Business, but I got to ask you, I bought numerous things from Amazon, but I still don't quite know how it works. Are they the intermediary? You buy it through them, then they go to the retailer or whomever it is, and then they get it or they get it drop shipped from there to you. How does all that work?
Yeah, if you buy on Amazon Marketplace, over 55% of the sales that are made on the marketplace are not by Amazon directly. They just support the platform, and retailers themselves sell off of Amazon platform. They typically also use AWS or Amazon Web Services as well. So Amazon is providing them a lot of help in providing the web services and the platform, but the handling of the product is all done by independent retailers.
So what do they do besides host a website, Amazon? Because
they just make money on it. Exactly. Now, when you buy Amazon Basics or a product that is made by Amazon, then Amazon is making that. But more and more, Amazon is operating as a platform. And that's why it's very difficult. They also, when a retailer sells on Amazon Marketplace, Amazon gets the data, and Amazon is really terrific at analyzing that data. So Amazon knows more about these retailers' businesses than they know themselves. So Amazon has incredible advantages when in this marketplace, and it's quite difficult for people to compete. Although some retailers are doing pretty well, Walmart, Costco, Target. They are, using their existing stores, and their stores are in really good locations and doing things like, buy online, pick up in the store, curbside delivery, and those kinds of operations are really giving Amazon a run for their money.
And Amazon pays no, they don't have any money tied up in inventory. They pay no inventory tax, I'm guessing?
Not if there's a product that's sold on the marketplace. When they have their own product, Amazon Basic or something, then that is product that they have in inventory. But they also serve as what's called a marketplace. They're just a platform to facilitate the interaction, but they don't have to handle the inventory.
I hope whatever the next big idea is, Professor, I hope you find it. Because you have a chance. I have no chance at all. Is there anything you wanted to bring up? And matter of fact, I will ask you that, looking ahead. What do you see 10 years from now?
You know, I just see people getting more and more delivering the customer value. One of the things that's different from the Amazon perspective, and probably people have heard Jeff Bezos say that, is they focus on the consumer. Rather than trying to push product out or sell product, they turn the equation around and say, what will make the consumer's life easier? Let's deliver to that. And that, surprisingly enough, was a brand new idea in retail.
Saw some video 2 days ago about a robot, actually, a self-driving car. Then a robot gets out. I mean, literally does this and carries a package to the porch. That doesn't portend good things for the labor market, does it?
Well, you know, I guess it'll move to other things, more to services, to experiences, maybe to more fun things. But, yeah, a lot of those kinds of things that can be facilitated by automation, I think we are moving in that direction. But hopefully it means that the jobs that people take on will be more fulfilling.
Doctor, it's been my delight. I hope you'll come back on with us.
Sure.
Thank
you. My pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you. Barbara Kahn, professor of marketing at the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania, author of The Shopping Revolution, How Successful Retailers Win Customers in an Era of Endless Disruption. Like it or not, it's going to be hard to find a brick-and-mortar store, I think, in years from now, and you'll be doing it all online. But we'll continue to discuss minutes from now. Right now, it's time for an update from CBS on WWL.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.